My text for this morning is taken from that fourth chapter of Galatians, verses 4 to 5. When the right time finally came, God sent his own son. He came as the son of a human mother and lived under the Jewish law to redeem those who were under the law so that we might become God's sons. This morning, at this very moment, I have no doubt, the shops and supermarkets hereabouts and everywhere else in the country are filled with people with one thought on their minds: Christmas. They're beginning to stock up with food and other supplies. They're buying the perfect presents for friends and loved ones, hoping that this year they'll not forget anyone. And they're getting in the Christmas trees and the decorations so as to make the house look nice. In other words, they're preparing as thoroughly as they can for the festive season. But today, as I've already said, in the Christian year, this Sunday is the period that we call Advent. And Advent means coming. And in this time, we centre our worship upon not the superficial Christmas festivities, but upon the coming into the world of God's own Son, Jesus Christ, which is the true significance of the Mass Day of Jesus Christ, the 25th of December. So these four Sundays of Advent are a time when we try to prepare our hearts and minds to celebrate once again the coming of Christ, the Messiah, into our world. And more than that, it's a time when we look forward in hope and in expectation to celebrating his coming again in our own hearts and lives in this day and age. And surely looking forward in hope is one of the most basic of all human experiences. People around us are looking forward in hope, whether they've anything specific that they hope for or not. But if you look at the third world, well, over there, people have very definite things to hope for, like the next meal or a sound medical treatment, a roof over their heads sometimes, or teaching for their children. They have hope and they despair if they can't find these things. Those people here of my generation, and I think there are one or two, will remember when we looked forward in hope with our hearts, when we yearned for the Second World War to end. We hoped with all our hearts that it would end in victory. We knew then what it meant to hope. Quite a number of years later now, fortunately, we're still a free nation. We've seen a tremendous rise in living standards. The shops are stacked with food. The employment rate is high. We have a free health service and everyone can get a good education if they're willing to work for it. But does that make us a society of satisfied people? Is the population proportionately happier, more contented than it was 50 years ago? I doubt it. Are people still not greedy and squabbling like Oliver Twist, always asking for more, only to find if they get it that they want still more? It seems that there's a quality in the human condition which rules that we're not easily satisfied. That contentment doesn't last for long in the human heart. However much we have, we always want more. It's said that the great emperor Alexander the Great conquered all the civilized world of his day, and he wept because there were no more empires to conquer. Always the voice within us calls for more. And sadly, today, some people try to silence this voice with drugs or with alcohol. We see in the newspapers the dreadful statistics concerning young people in this country involved with drugs. About 40% of 15-year-olds have allegedly used cannabis, whilst 1 in 20 young people admit to having used hard drugs. And alongside this, the increased use of alcohol as a route to happiness, especially by young people, is apparent in our town centres and a disturbing thought. But sadly, they'll discover with experience that they're worshipping false gods that can never bring peace or contentment to the human heart. This yearning in the human heart for completeness can never be satisfied by material things, because as its root lie a spiritual deficiency, a deficiency that only a spiritual response can appease. So people look forward in hope, but are never quite sure what it is that they are hoping for. But this clearly has always been the human condition, and this lack of peace in the heart, of unfulfilled longings, has been at the root of much human conflict and distress, of war and of crime. Now my second point is this, that this situation was certainly true in Old Testament times. For the Jewish people were always looking forward in hope. It's a basic theme of the Old Testament, and many chapters ring with the yearning of hope for better times to come. In the book of Exodus, we first hear of the people of Israel when they're in captivity in Egypt. They're led to freedom by Moses, and as they travel through the desert, they have high hopes for the land that God has promised to them, a land that they are told will be flowing with milk and honey. And they conquer this land of Canaan and they settle in it. And God has given them his law by which they must live as a nation and as individual people as well. And while they keep the law, all goes well for time. But as time passes, the itch of discontent grows stronger. Some are not satisfied with what God has given them. They want more than they are allowed and are even willing to break God's laws to get what they want. Some even defect to follow the gods of other nations whose laws are less strict, who offer more for less effort. So God sends them prophets to warn them and bring them back to his rule. But many do not listen to the prophets and continue to follow their own inclinations, contrary to God's laws, even stoning the prophets whom they look upon as a nuisance. They become a nation that God can no longer use to fulfill his plans for the world. And so God punishes them. He allows them to be conquered. And the cream of the nation is taken away as captives to serve as slaves in Babylon. But prophets also go to Babylon with them. And the prophet's message urges them to pick themselves up and to look forward again, to look forward in hope and expectation. For, said the prophets, if they looked forward in hope, trusting God for the future, then he would turn to them again and restore them to Jerusalem once more. And the prophets told them in wondrous words of a new king whom God would send, who would bring new hope to the Jewish people and to all mankind, a new king who would fulfill the highest hopes of everyone upon earth. Isaiah, the greatest of all the prophets, is the one who tells us most about God's new king who is to come to his people. In chapter 42, Isaiah tells us that the new king will be not just for the Jews, but for every nation. God says, "I have filled him with my spirit, and he will bring justice to every nation." In chapter 40, Isaiah tells us that this Messiah will be more like a shepherd than a king. For he says, "He will take care of his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs together and carry them in his arms, and he will gently lead their mothers." In chapter 53, in a dazzling vision of the future, Isaiah sees the suffering that Christ will endure. "We despised him and rejected him, and he endured suffering and pain." And that would become very true. But with deep insight, Isaiah also sees the meaning of these sufferings. He endured the suffering that should have been ours, the pain that we should have borne. Isaiah foresees too the death of Christ. He was arrested and sentenced and led off to die. He was put to death for the sins of our people. He took the place of many sinners and prayed that they might be forgiven. And these were just some of the prophecies in which Isaiah and the other prophets proclaimed about the just and righteous king whom God would send to rule Israel, the Messiah, as they would come to call him. And with these promises in their hearts, many Jews returned home from Babylon to Jerusalem, looking forward in hope and expectation for God's promises to be fulfilled. So to recap, firstly, we all hope that one day life will bring happiness. Secondly, the Jews looked for a new king who would satisfy their deepest longings. And then we come to our third point. Our third point, which is Christ is the only true fulfillment of all our hopes. Christ is the only real fulfillment of our hopes. A faithful minority of the Jewish people watched and waited for the arrival of the Messiah, God's son, God's servant, God's messenger. When he came, he fulfilled all the predictions of the prophets. He was born in Bethlehem, as Micah had said. He was born of a virgin and visited by kings, as Isaiah had said. In many other ways, he fulfilled the prophets. And yet the Jews rejected him. They had expected someone very different. What they had wanted was a conquering king, someone who would overthrow Roman rule, subdue other nations, and make Israel a force to be reckoned with. But what they got was a humble carpenter from Nazareth, a friend of fishermen and tax collectors, a friend even of sinners, a man who taught people to forgive their enemies rather than fight them. This was not the man who would make their nation great. This was not the fulfillment of their most fervent hopes. But he is of ours, of our most fervent hopes. For this Jesus is the one who through his weakness and his failure paid for our sins and made open the way to God. He came unto his own, but his own received him not. But to those who did receive him, he gave the right to be children of God. So at this Advent, we can look forward in hope to Christmas time when we celebrate his coming. For we know that Christ didn't simply come at Christmas and then go away. He came to remain with us here in the Spirit at all times and in all places. If we let him into our hearts through prayer and through living his life in the world, we'll find that he is the one and the only one who can fulfill all our yearnings. He is the one who can bring peace and contentment to our hearts. A wise man has said, there is a God-shaped blank in all our hearts, and Christ is the one who fills that space, the final piece in the jigsaw of our lives. He alone makes us complete, for the coming of Christ is not just an event in history, it's the living experience of the eternal made real in the here and now, in the hearts of each of us. And if you've not opened fully the door of your heart to him whose festival it is that is coming along, then do so now at this Christmas time, and you'll know the joy and contentment of this greatest Christmas gift of all. For when the right time finally came, God sent his own Son so that we might become God's sons and daughters. May that be so for all of us. Amen.